What's going on, everybody? You know what time it is. This is the most dangerous show on the Tasty Live Network, folks. It's Engineering the Trade. I'm your host, Jamal Chandler, and I got him back again. Josh Fabian in the house, my guy. What's happening, dude?
What's going on?
I know you're excited.
I'm pumped.
Yeah.
Can't you tell?
Why are you pumped?
We're going to the Super Bowl, baby.
Oh, yeah. Here we go.
We're going to the Super Bowl.
It's going to happen. An NFL draft last night, for those who don't know. Obviously, there was no better draft had. The grades are in. The Bears had an A+ for the draft.
For the first time in my life, and I told you I did this, I actually took my phone out and I recorded my television. I held my phone up to the TV set and I recorded them making the pick. They're like, I think I'm going to want this. I think that one day I'm going to want to look back on this. Like, this is the night that it all started.
I agree.
And I saw you had one with your son. It was awesome.
I did, man. So, yeah. As I told you, we had baseball practice last night. It was like, so the plan was to do, like, we had two groups. We were doing baseball. And then at the end, we were supposed to do wiffle ball, right? Well, it was like 6:52, 6:53. And the other dude I'm coaching with was like, oh, man, what time is it? I was like, 6:53. He's like, oh, so we're going to do wiffle ball? I was like, no. I want to get home and see the draft. And he's like, oh, I don't care about that. I was like, I do. And some of these other kids do, too. They want to see it. Dude, we had another kid to take home. I mean, it's only 5 minutes away, but we raced to take that kid.
You just slow down and sort of race him out. Like, get out.
We parked. Me and Austin both, we parked. We got out of the car. We ran inside. I did have the phone on in the car, so we were watching, like, when the Detroit players came out.
And
gearing up. I wanted to be inside, be ready. We ran inside. We dropped our stuff. Yeah. Went, sat down. And then when they started doing it, I recorded it. And yeah, we got up, we did our thing.
That was great.
The Bears announced they're picking Caleb Williams. We cheered, we hyped up.
You know, I'll tell you what, it took them longer than I expected to announce him. I thought for sure they'd kick off the draft. You know, that Goodell's like, and the 2024 draft is underway. And with the first pick,
the Bears on the clock.
Yeah. But it was like,
and then it was going to be like,
pick was in. Like, wait a second, why are we waiting? Don't do this to me. Don't pull this on me. Like, because then you start thinking, okay, this is the Bears. It is entirely possible they're going to, like, draft a punter. You know, like, it's like they can pull that.
Can you imagine? Dude, the city would revolt.
Oh, my God. It would.
No, it was cool. It was interesting, too, because you're right. The time was ticking off. I'm like, okay, 9 minutes. Like, they're going to, like, at eight. They're going to do it within a minute, right? Like,
right.
But they kind of let the whole time run through.
Yeah.
They showed the war room. They're sitting in there.
They're just sitting there. Nobody's moving.
Yeah, everybody's
just staring at the TV set. I'm like, what? Is that live?
And then finally they get up. What's up with all the hugging when you make a draft pick? Like, what's up with
that? I don't get. That's a great question because actually that ran through my head last night. Like,
why do you need to hug?
You know what it reminded me of? Like, when my kids were born and, like, you come out of the delivery room.
Did you hug the doctor?
No, but, like, you come out of the delivery room, like, my mom gives me a hug, my dad would give me a hug. You know, like, everybody's excited, gives you a hug because you just had a kid. You just drafted a dude that's supposed to be really good at what he does because you used the number one pick on him. Like,
is that hug like, yeah, we did this right? We didn't mess up? Like, is there a war room where they don't hug? Did they hug in the Falcons war room last night?
I want to know, did Belichick ever hug anybody? No way.
No,
absolutely no. Hell no. Hell no.
I don't think so. You know, he was on last night. I didn't watch it, but he was on Pat McAfee. He did his thing. Saban was on. I saw a little bit of that.
Saw some Saban. I did listen to some Saban. I saw that Belichick was on and that he said Drake May has to get a lot better.
That's what he said.
Yeah.
Really? Like,
you bitter, Bill? You bitter?
You know they're going to bring him in at some point, like as a consultant, talk with him and do
probably
something. I don't know. No, it was cool last night, man. I can honestly say, my brother used to always be like, yeah, I'm sitting down and watch the draft. I didn't always watch the draft quite like that. It was kind of boring, to be honest with you. I mean, they've really changed it into a huge event.
Yeah.
I mean, there were, dare I say, a shitload of people in Detroit last night.
It's become, they've turned it into like the Emmys for sports fans.
Yeah.
Like, it's the equivalent of the Emmys or the Oscars, or are those the same thing? I don't even know.
They're different, dude.
Okay. I mean,
that's only you can get an EGOT.
An EGOT?
You don't know what EGOT is? Are you serious?
It sounds like something you need a shot for. What is an EGOT?
If you know what an EGOT is, type it in the chat.
It's an EGOT.
Really,
somebody EGOT help me out.
It comes to awards. Let's help you figure it out. Okay, you named two of them. No, don't look yet. No. Okay, you named two of them, right? What'd you say?
Emmy.
That's one. E, obviously.
Oscar would be the ah and got.
Yeah.
Grammy.
That's so you got ego. So
Tony.
You would have ego. You would, yeah.
I've never been accused of lacking ego.
Even before the chat had to write it. There you go.
Yeah.
Been a crazy week, man. It's been a crazy week when we look at markets. What do you think, Scott? It seems like a little exhaustion today, right?
Well, you know,
I don't know if you can call it exhaustion. We're up 50.
But we have not we've been in like this 5-point range, maybe 6-point range, most of the afternoon. And it's awesome. Yeah, yeah. If you, especially if like he had the foresight to sell, I don't know, yeah. No DT.
It's great. Yeah.
But it's like this has been a long, long ass week. Okay, and like for me personally, it's been a long week just running around, but. Like you had a lot of stuff this week between economic numbers, earnings season starting to, you know, really get going. And I think you get to Friday Tesla afternoon.
Earnings, GDP, Meta yeah. earnings,
Google. It's just a lot for this market to digest. And I think you get to Friday afternoon and the market's just like, that's it. You know, 2.5-day weekend for me. I'm out.
Yeah. Yeah. And the crazy thing is we got a big week next week.
Yeah.
We got a really big week next week.
Yeah. As big as this week, arguably.
Yeah. You got the Fed meeting or whatever. You got.
Is a Fed meeting next week too?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So you got that. You got employment. You've got Jolts. You've got Apple, Amazon. I don't even know who else is on deck.
Could we pull up the platform real quick? Let's see. When we got. Let me knock. Just so John. Can we? Because I know John might be. can we pull up a platform looking at next week's moves? I would say, wow, there's not a whole lot of vol being priced in. Honestly, I thought it would
be. That's interesting because I made the comment.
This is underpriced, bro. Wait, am I looking at the right thing? This is underpriced.
What are you looking at for just SPX?
Yeah, I'm looking at SPX.
I'll just pull it up here.
Can we pull up a platform? Please. Please, sir, can we pull up the platform? Thank you. I appreciate it. I was so in trouble.
Are you done?
Let's see.
Are you done now?
I'm working on it. You know, I'm working off
80 points.
London, I'm working on my, like, you know.
80 points. My which is?
Hackney. Is it Hackney? Cockney?
Cockney. Cockney. The Cockney accent.
See, I knew it was. I was trying to avoid that.
You're saying Cockney?
Thank you. Yeah, just keep saying it all throughout the show.
The Cockney accent. Really? That's what got you? Of all the things I've said, that's the one that took you down?
Yeah, that's the one. Monday, 9 vol. Obviously not a whole lot going on. Same thing with Tuesday. Oh, Tuesday is end of the month. That's right. Oh, we could still have end of the month buying pressure. I say buying on purpose because I feel like more often than not, it's buying pressure.
Yeah.
However, if April has been weak, sometimes it could be selling. So April, this 30th, we could end up doing something. We'll see. Am I still?
80 points for the next week in SPX, which.
So Wednesday's the day, right? 13 ball, 59 points.
Yeah.
I don't know. 13 IBR, I feel like that's underpriced.
I felt like vol is underpriced.
Yeah, I saw it.
I'm Batman. Vols, I felt like... Oh, I just saw it on the YouTube now.
I heard the music and everything. Dun, 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 dun.
I felt like Vols underpriced, period. I said that at the beginning of the week, that it just felt like a very... Even with it, whatever we were at on Monday, I said it just feels raw. It feels light. Like, we could get some moves in some of these earnings, and we did, you know, Tesla,
yeah.
Google, Microsoft, you know, I think Microsoft actually was at the expected move maybe.
Yeah.
But I still think that there's like subcutaneous volatility.
That's not a thing.
I just said it. It's a thing.
Isn't that like something under your skin?
Yeah. There's like volatility underneath the skin, under the surface. Like, I just feel like these names have the potential that are coming up to really rock the market.
The names this week? We mean next week?
This week and next week. Next week you got Amazon and Apple.
Oh, Amazon and Apple. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And I just feel like they can really, you know, the 15 VIX in the futures, to me, is understated.
You know what? Apple is one that I would probably get long. I'm probably going to play both of those on earnings. I've decided that I don't really trade earnings, and I really don't, but I like to play those names, like the Mag 7 names. Like,
mm-hmm.
I do like playing those. And if I had to pick right now, I would probably play Apple from the long side.
If I was going to play Apple, it would be from the long side.
Long delta side.
Yeah.
I don't know what kind of trade yet. I usually decide that by the time we get to the day, but I think I'm probably going to do that. Amazon, I'm not sure yet.
Amazon's had a decent run. You know, we talked about this. I don't really trade earnings too often, but I did.
Yeah.
I traded Tesla because it was just such an extreme. You know, I traded it to the long side.
Mm-hmm.
It worked out fine.
Did a diagonal.
Meta, I had myself convinced that this thing's not going to move at all. It's just going to be a non-event. That didn't work out so well.
I did a Iron Condor in May in that. At the time, it was fairly wide. You know what? I mean, Meta was trading 490, right? Before earnings or something like that. I did the 430.
Yeah.
Short the 430 and short the 560. Those were my short strikes. Can't say it's worked out yet. I should probably
roll. I did a 10-point wide at the money iron fly that did not
pan out.
Did not pan out well at all. No, it was pretty, it was kind of an embarrassing trade, to be honest with you.
Rollage.
But
rolling.
So let me, that brings me to a question.
Yeah.
So, and I'm interested on your take, I'm interested on your take on this because you worked at a prop firm.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to selling premium, like, I have found
that you're, you were thinking, right?
That was me thinking. That was a thought bubble that popped up over my head. That I do much better trading long delta positions and allowing positive drift.
Long delta selling vol.
Selling vol. Selling vol. But yeah, so mainly selling puts, put spreads, things like that.
You don't really sell spreads like that.
I don't like selling spreads. I'll sell puts, but you know I'm not a big fan. If I'm gonna do a put spread,
you have phobia of spreads. You have spreadophobia.
Subcutaneous volatility could be a thing. Spreadophobia. What did you say?
Nothing. Carry on.
If I'm gonna sell a spread, it's gonna be pretty wide. It's gonna be a synthetic short put.
Okay.
But I like to. I personally have more success letting positive drift do some of the heavy lifting for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious if, as a prop trader and then as a retail, self-directed retail trader, what your thoughts are on that.
As a prop firm, we traded, you could trade any way you want, whether it was from the long side or the short side. And again, I think the thing that people, you know, they probably trade the way that we talk about Tasty style and think they're trading prop firm style. And they're very, very different.
Mm-hmm.
Prop firm, you would try to put things on as big as possible, as big as you could, close to your limits, right? You'd have set limits, position limits, and portfolio limits. You'd have anywhere from 200 to 1,000 names in a portfolio, depending on how you wanted to trade. And you manage that portfolio by looking at ratios. We talk about ratios, gamma to vega ratio, vega to theta ratio. Like, these are ratios we'd look at quite often to manage a portfolio. I ended up trading a lot. I was kind of mostly a long trader. I always felt like things were going to move. Mm-hmm. I did. I always felt like in a lot.
When you say long, you mean you were
trading? I mean like long, like buying options.
Okay.
It's definitely okay. Mostly a long trader. And again, it wouldn't just be naked options always. It would be naked. You know, I'd buy stock, sell calls against it. I'm sorry, I'd buy options, sell stock against it, you know, buy call, sell stock, buy puts, long stock. Like, we would hedge things too, and we would dynamically hedge them. So if it did move, then you're able to scalp some of your stock against your option. You mm-hmm. can monetize that option. I definitely traded like that a lot. I was mostly a long person. I was always in names that I felt was going to move a lot. That's just the way I, you know, liked it. And a lot of that comes from something we've mutually talked about a lot, is IBD. Like, IBD was that's when I first started learning how to trade before I worked at a firm professionally. I learned a lot through IBD, and so I had trouble at first coming to options because I was trying to figure out, okay, this name is about to break out. What's the best strategy for me to use to do it? And a lot of times I was thinking, okay, it's breaking out to the upside, I'm going to buy calls. But as a lot of people who've been trading with us now, they understand, like, if you buy a call, it's not necessarily
right.
guaranteed
to work. You can be right and be wrong. You can
be right and be wrong at the same time on that trade. And so the cool thing about trading at a prop firm was like, oh, now I'm long stock, but I'm long options, but I'm long this call. I have some short stock to play with too. So now I can at least scalp in the between time before the big move actually comes. And even that doesn't necessarily always work out. It depends on the environment. That was a long answer, but I'm getting there. I would say, you know what's interesting? The first time I ever saw the Tasty style methodology, what we do now, but not without even knowing it, was at a prop firm. There was this guy, who used to trade a lot of options, like a lot of, like, again, at a firm when we were trading big, 50, 100,000 lots stock against that, massive positions.
Right.
Paying $500 a night in one position, paying, you know, I mean, I wasn't doing this, but the guy that I, it was a guy that I, a senior trader that I was working with at one point in time, we were working together, but it was his portfolio. I mean, there was, I remember the most we were paying was $1 million a night at one time.
Really?
Yeah, really.
For real. It's a lot.
And so it's a lot of things that you have to, you really are expecting moves, so you're able to scalp stock and monetize those options. But there was a guy in the firm who was trading counter to that. And, and everybody wasn't long. There were people who were doing the same thing we were from the long ball side, being short.
Okay.
Short 1,000 puts in something and short stock against it. Short big positions. I mean, actually, there's a good friend of mine, Brendan Shee. I want to have him come on and do a sort of a rising star.
I'm not good enough for you anymore.
No, you are. But he's got an interesting story. He traded on the floor. He traded at a firm the same size I'm talking about. And now he trades retail size. He doesn't trade more than 3 or 5 lots. And this is the get I'm getting at. He's not the guy I'm talking about. But there's another guy that was very different from anybody else the way we traded. He would trade 5 lots, 10 lots, max position 20 lots.
So he's really small relative to
really
what
small
you guys are
relative
doing.
To what we did.
Yeah.
And if the average portfolio would have 200 names to 400 names, he'd have like 1,000 to 1,500.
Okay.
All tiny little positions. And the idea was that, yeah, options are kind of made to be sold. We know that. Like, this is, again, why I'm saying when we were trading from the long side, we knew we'd have to scalp it unless there was a huge, you don't always get a 20% move in a name, right?
Like, right.
Those who've been in the game long enough realize those are rare. You really don't see those.
Right. Moves, yeah. Right? You're making small.
Yeah. Or even a 5% move. I mean, look at NVIDIA today. NVIDIA is moving 5%. That's not like of the norm, even for NVIDIA. Like, we haven't, it may move up decent from time to time, but it doesn't move like this.
I hadn't looked at NVIDIA today. Yeah.
Right. Like, those things don't happen. And so this guy found a way to realize, like, okay, I just want a bunch of positions here and there. They're all going to bleed over time, bleed vol, bleed money. I'm going to make that money and just collect that premium as time goes on. And he settled in a, like, 4 to 6 month range. He didn't go any further than 6 months. That might be too far, actually. I don't know if he went 6 months, but probably 3 to 6 months was his time period. And he had on a lot of different little positions, and he made money. He printed money, literally.
Okay. And so it works on, it worked on a,
it's essentially the tasty style of trading.
Yeah. So, but you weren't doing that yourself.
No.
So you were, so when you started coming in,
2008 was a good year because I was trading the most film alongside. That worked out well.
Yeah.
2009 was not that good of a year because, things moved around, but vol was coming in that year. And we were long a decent amount of things that were probably a little too high in vol. We were thinking, too, 2008 was going to carry over more. There was still more to go. The financial system was pretty broken. We completely underestimated how fast the government would rescue the stock market. Completely. I don't think anybody had that.
I think everybody was caught off guard by that.
Yeah.
And that what you're saying brings me to an ancillary but a related point in that, you know, our approach of selling premium, it absolutely works. I don't doubt that for a second. I just, like I said earlier, I have found my success comes in incorporating that positive drift element into it. One of the things, though, that it was mentioned in the office this week is just sort of talking about volatility and how quickly, you know, 2008 volatility stayed bid the whole year. You go to 2020 COVID, volatility was bid for a month, give or take, maybe 6 weeks, came back in. It just seems to me like if you, and as somebody that subscribes to the efficient market theory, that as markets become more technologically advanced and liquidity grows, they become more efficient, and therefore volatility by default has to correct and normalize more quickly. It's just a byproduct of all of that.
What you're saying, maybe 10 years ago we would get to a 20 or 22 VIX, and we'd forget 22. Let's just say we got up to a 30 VIX, and we'd hold that.
We could hold that for
like 2 months or something, and then eventually it'd fade.
Some extended period of time. Today, I don't think you can hold a 30 VIX for more than a couple days.
See, I don't know if I agree with that fully, because it depends on the scenario. I mean, look at the Russia-Ukraine war. We held that for, I don't remember exactly, but like at least a month.
I'd have to look back on it. I know that
it was like 6 weeks.
Oil volatility, I remember holding up. I don't remember what.
Equity vol held in for like
six. Did it?
Weeks. I mean, it was up there for like six weeks or so. I felt like if it happened in early February, I thought, and it went through like maybe March. I want to say. I guess I can look back.
That's possible. I think it depends
on the scenario.
I think that that's also why the positive drift element that I mentioned has been beneficial for me, because essentially what I am saying is I'm expecting volatility even if it spikes and normalizes quickly, and positive drift to take back over. Because if you get that vol spike.
When was that? Was that 2020?
That was February 2022.
Two, right?
Yeah. VIX was in the 20s in 2022.
So, yeah, here is some. Was it here? I don't know if it was here or not.
I'd have to hang on. I got to look.
Let's just see. I mean, there. This is. Did it happen in January?
It was Feb.
Was it Feb?
The invasions. Yeah, it started in Feb. I'm taking a look at a 3-year here.
I mean, there's definitely real fear here on the 24th.
There we go.
See, I felt like it was starting.
Okay, we did. Okay, that's fair. We did say in the 20s, but it.
I think it just really depends on the situation.
I suppose it does. It's just been, I think, trying to understand why the positive drift helps me so much. Like, what is causing the positive drift? You know, what, where, it's not just, you know, because you're taking on the
optimism in the
market. Well, it's taking the risk that, you know, and so you should be rewarded for taking that risk that the market's going to go higher, you know, that whole argument. But I think also the fact that the fear just doesn't stick around too long. It creates, you know, the buy the dip mentality. I think that to a large extent it does work. Because of positive drift, when I have been wrong, I can roll puts.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, and if I can just sort of wait that out, if I'm wrong on a put, if I'm wrong on the call side and it gets away from me, I'm in trouble.
It's true. You're right. That's why I don't necessarily like to sell calls a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really sell too many naked calls.
Mm-hmm.
I may sell a call spread every now and again. And usually I will do that as a result of probably having a couple. Like, for example, I'm short a call spread in Micron right now. And the only reason I'm doing that is because I'm already short SMH and I'm short AMD puts and put spread.
Okay.
So I feel reasonably comfortable saying, like, okay, if that one shoots up higher, those two are going to be up too. And I'm going to, you know. It's every now and again I try to find calls or call spreads to sell against probably an overwhelming position on one way or the other. So you're right. I don't necessarily like to sell calls for that reason. I'm worried about the big move to the upside.
Or if I do it, I'm going to sell a very small delta call where, like, okay, you know, I'm not collecting a lot. I'm really doing it more to hedge the bigger put that I've sold. But
you're not doing it because you're mad at the stock.
I mean, I get mad, but
I mean, I've definitely done that.
I'm not gonna say I don't do that. I'm not gonna say I haven't traded angry because I certainly have.
Yeah, we're not supposed to do it, but no, I mean, I don't know. I think the volatility thing depends on, it's a case by case basis. It mm-hmm. really is. And look at the last couple of years. I mean, COVID. Yeah, we stayed elevated for a while, but we certainly retreated from the highs fairly fast.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say equity vol recovered faster than America's psyche did around
100%. 100%. The markets,
which is not usual. Usually, like, for example, look at what just happened recently with oil and oil vol. Like, oil vol crept up, oil got higher.
Right.
But then it calmed down fairly fast after all these situations that have happened. And it was the same thing last year when, you know, stuff happened in the Middle East. So I don't know. It really is a case by case basis, I think.
I think there's validity to that argument that it's a case by case basis. I'm trying to understand why it is that I have significantly more success with a long delta position.
It's generally the skew that we talk about in the market, right? I would say. I mean, yeah, there's more skew to the downside than those that have higher.
You don't think I'm just a good stock picker?
You're incredible stock picker.
Thank you. I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah, is that the closure you needed?
That's what my mom told me.
So what do you think for next week? All the stuff we laid out. We got jobs. It starts off with JOLTS on Tuesday,
JOLTS.
Is it Tuesday or Wednesday? I can't remember. One of them days.
I don't. Does it matter?
No,
I mean,
doesn't.
I think that.
I can't believe we're talking about damn JOLTS. but it moves the markets.
Did you say jolts? Are we talking about jolts? Jolts? I think for the rest of today, we probably just trade sideways. We probably close around in this. I know you do. Probably in this 51. I said this morning I thought we'd be between like 51.10 and 51.30. And, you know, I'm off a little bit. I think, you know, that's probably, we don't trade below that. So I say we're in this range. And then I think next week, based on what we've seen so far with earnings, I think we're going to do okay with the earnings. I think the economic data has been a continuation of what we've seen now for months, where even if it's a little stronger than expected, it's not crazy off the charts. It's actually, it's good growth levels. It's a healthy level of inflation. It's not so much that you're going to raise interest rates. It's also not weak enough to suggest we should be cutting rates. So I expect rates are going to stay, and that's why I've kind of talked about, I think bonds are around a 114 area as a floor. Yeah. And I
hope so.
But I think for stocks, you know, if I had to pick up or down at the end of next week, I'm going with up.
Obviously, you want the positive drift.
I'm not even positioned for that necessarily right now.
I'm thinking up too, but that's one of the reasons why I'm thinking about countering myself and putting on a
butterfly. You're going to fade yourself?
For next Friday. I'm thinking about putting on a put butterfly for next Friday. These are the days you do it, folks. You want like that's when you do it. You do it on a day like this.
Do it when you can.
You do it when you can. I'm thinking about doing the 50-55. 5,000 is my middle strike. Did I say 55? No, just regular 50-50. 50 points wide. Think about doing this one.
I don't hate that trade, especially if you got long delta overall.
It's 420. I'm thinking about doing that one. We'll see. But it should be a busy one next week. Should be fun. Should be awesome. Folks, that's the show.
Grumpy Mike.
What do you say?
Grumpy Mike. Next week will be another crappy week like every other.
That's my Grumpy Mike. That's right.
Keep it consistent.
Oh, nice.
What did he say?
Go to 2:30.
I was about to take a nap. No, okay.
We're not going anywhere.
We're not done.
We thought we were getting the hook.
We don't have another 15 minutes of material.
We're going to make 15 minutes of material. We're going to take our shirts off. I am thinking about doing this one. I'll wait till the end of the day, though. I mean, I don't really think a week from now a week from now is going to be an issue. But
SPX.
I don't think price is going to change too much. But
probably not between now.
I'll wait in case the market does. We've seen this happen. Like, it'll be right here, and then the market goes another 20 handles, and I feel like a jackass because I already paid like 4.30 for it when I could probably get it for 4 or 3.80.
It's usually what happens with me.
I'm going to wait.
Yeah.
I am looking at that. This is awesome. We got extra time. As we did that, I guess I can talk about what else did I do this week? I did sell a 0DTE SPX early this morning, like you said.
I got a good one.
Fait accompli yet. It's still... I did it at 5,100. I needed to fade back. Talking to you and your damn positive drift on the show has caused the market to positively drift higher.
Well, it's good. You know what? Because I sat here for all week next to Tom and listened to his bearish BS and how grumpy he is.
Mike is saying right now.
Yeah.
Saying, remember the days when Tom would talk about maintaining short?
Yeah. And I listened to him all week. So when I scalp, and I scalp daily, at least... You know, at least once, if not multiple times in a day, and I always scalp to the long side. Like, I have found that works for me. Mm-hmm. But I've come into the office every day this week, sitting next to Tom, hearing him and his, you know, it's overbought, and I can't believe they're up here, and I'm like, they're going to kill him. And so finally, I'm like, you know what?
The same Tom who says, ignore the noise that other people
have. Yeah, exactly. But if you sit, like, literally, I sit, you know, 2 feet, not even
right.
2 feet
we
from
sit right next to him.
Yeah, and he's making a valid, there's logic to his argument, okay? And it starts to seep into my psyche a little bit. I'm like, you know, he's kind of got a point. So yesterday, I'm like, you know what? Or on Wednesday night, I got short. Covered, made some money. And yesterday, you know, he's like, oh, yeah, they got him now. They're going to crush him. I'm like, you know, he could be right. We could still have another 100 points down. I'm going to jump back in on the short side. Soon as I jump in, I got short at the low point of the day and just watched them climb back and back and back and back. And then we had a meeting after the close on the other side of the office, right when Google and Microsoft announced. And I grab my phone, I take a look at it. And, oh my God. I ran back over. You didn't see me do this. I ran back over to this side of the office. I had to put my computer in my backpack. I was ready to leave as soon as we're done with me. I grab my computer. I whip it out. I open it up. I'm trying to log back in quickly. I'm doing all this as fast as I can. I'm just like, cover, cover, cover. And I'm not getting filled. And I just switch it over to a market order. I'm like, I got to cover this. And then it dawns on me. I'm like, you just got suckered in by Tom.
Yeah.
On this, 100%. I got punked. 100%. I got punked by him. So I turned around and I got long again this morning, and it worked.
Yeah, I don't like to try and pick. It's hard to pick at these levels. I mean, not these levels, but my point is when you got this type of pattern going on. I mean, look at this. Like this right here tells you how undecided the market has been.
More for sure.
It's hard to do that. So I tend to try not to trade. You're a better man than me to try and scalp right now. I think it's really hard. The market is very. Very finicky right now.
To me, the market feels like it is looking for a reason to go higher. It's not, and it recognizes it's not getting it in the economic data or the, let me rephrase that. It's not getting it in the form of we're going to get an interest rate cut.
Yeah, I was about to say, that's what I just pulled up, as you see. I mean, this has been the issue right here.
Yeah. It's going to be, earnings coming through. And
let's go back to January when the 2-year was at 4.2.
Let's go back.
High, but it closed at 4.22, right? 4.22. We were sitting around this level.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had, I think this was a Fed meeting right here, February 2nd. Oh, we're probably not going to cut rates in March. And it's like, oh, okay, cool. Took off. And then we had another this was a CPI read, I'm pretty sure, because it's like the 13th.
Boom.
And so it's been a lot of this type of stuff. Fed meeting, then CPI, then Fed meeting, then CPI. And all of them amount to the fact that we're probably not going to get as many. We're definitely not getting as many rate cuts as we thought.
No, definitely not.
Now it's like, are we going to get a rate cut at all this year? Mind you, things are good in the economy.
I don't think. Yeah. And that's, to me, that's what's lost. I think what's lost on a lot of people and in the broader media narrative talking about this market is this focus on, PCE came in and, it's 2.8 or whatever it was this morning. We're not going to get a rate cut. It's like, that's good. That's like, going to your doctor and him not increasing your medicine.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's like, exactly. Hey, this we found the level that works for you. Like, I sound like such an old person right now. I'm speaking, holy cow, this is what an old person says. So it's like when my mom goes to the doctor.
Maybe we won't become those dudes where all we start talking about is our ailments. Because I do have friends like that.
Oh,
I got 50s and 60s
I've got
old friends.
Dude, I've got them
that just talk about, my back and this is what's going on. I went to the doctor for this and I'm like, oh my God. Like,
yeah, no, I can, we can do
away from these guys.
No, you want to have that conversation?
No.
Oh, okay. I cannot have it. No. Whatever you want. Whatever you
I'm
want.
Not saying you can't have it. I'm just saying all the time we can't do that.
Can we bitch about something, though? Because I feel like as you get old.
That starts, though.
But as you get old, like, you've earned that right to bitch.
Yeah.
Like, I think, like, that's what you've paid into all your life is the right, once you hit a certain age, to just complain all the time.
Yeah, when you're young, you just get, you just get it handed to you all day
that,
long.
And you pull your pants up. I'm absolutely convinced that pulling up your pants to close to your sternum has to be the most comfortable thing in the world. You don't, because that all old people do it, okay? And I think it's something you don't realize until you're old, and it's like this fraternity type thing. It's a secret. They don't tell you. It's like, you can't tell anybody.
I don't want to be a part of that fraternity.
No, I'm telling you, it's going to be comfortable.
No, it's not.
I'm going to. Anyhow. But it's back to what I was saying. It's like the economic numbers are coming in with a very healthy, indicative of a healthy economy.
Yeah.
So you don't need a rate cut.
Well, except for GDP this week, though.
That was the one that threw everybody off.
Threw the market.
That was a little
tizzy. And honestly, I thought we were going to be lower after that. I mean,
that was an interesting print. And now keep in mind, that was the first read.
Yeah.
And Victor and I have this joke where, because I made a mention once about the second reading of GDP, how I said it's an important read, and he's like, you're an idiot. I'm really not, because the number changes quite a bit between the first estimate and the second estimate. So I'm curious what the second estimate will show. But that threw a hiccup in the system of, you started hearing, the stagflation word. But
exactly. And again, this is another report that for a majority of my career, never paid attention to GDP. Not at all. Never paid attention to inflation reports. yards of CPI. And realizing, you know, backward looking, I realized that I came into like to trade professionally at a time in 2006 when we were at a high interest rate level. Like interest rates were above 4%, I believe, compared to zero, which has mostly been the last 15 years or so, almost 20 years. Yep. It's mostly been zero, but it was definitely like a higher time period, you know? And so this is kind of getting back towards that.
Yeah.
And I think at least this time the economy seems to function well on it. It's seemingly functioning well. But to your point, that GDP number the other day freaked the market out. And now I think the GDP things are going to be an event.
It's going to be an event. I mean, it absolutely will be, which, you know, that's fine. That's just one more thing to trade, you know,
yeah.
So I'm cool with it. But it, you know, we are at interest rates are kind of at like their historic norms.
Mm-hmm.
Like the 30 year, I think, is around 7 1/8 right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty certain you could fact check me on it, keep me honest, but I'm pretty certain that's right around like the historical average. I know that when I bought my first house in 2000, I paid over 8%, which, you know, I know Tom and Tony, they talk about buying a house in the 80s, I paid 30%. And I'm like, yeah, like, well, you're stupid for doing that. Like, you know, paying 30%, that was not a good decision.
Yeah.
But, you know, I believe when I bought it 8%, I remember at the time, you know, like, this is pretty much what a 30 year goes for throughout history, is around this level. So
it's also a good, you know, interest rate level for savers, for those who want to put money in CDs and things like that right now. Like, that's a viable option. You know, if you have cash on the sidelines, like, that works.
8%
is good. Yeah. People are able to get jobs.
You can't float
in and out of jobs like you could 3 years ago, which is probably a good thing anyway. I mean, it's like, you don't want people floating from college to college like crazy.
You want a healthy level of, you need some unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I used to use the analogy. Remember that game that it has like the numbers on the tiles and you slide them around to try and get them in order?
Yeah, I do. I don't know.
And then there'd be an empty slot.
Yeah.
Okay, that empty slot is unemployment. Like, without that number, without that hole there, everybody's stuck in a job. And the only way that people are going to go from one job to the next is bidding wars on talent. That's not good. That's where you get inflation from. So you need a little bit of unemployment. It's the lubricant that allows things to keep moving around.
Yeah.
So, you know, where we are right now, whatever we were in the last print, I'm blanking.
I don't know.
3.6?
Right? Change, you're saying?
The percentage, whatever the
rate is. Yeah. That's like 3.6 maybe.
Yeah. That's ideal.
100% unemployment, yeah.
Yeah, that's ideal, you know? So things are really good. I don't understand the malaise that seems to permeate.
Well, I think it's crazy because I think the sentiment has been, for those who, and honestly, it's a media thing more than anything, this idea of rate cuts. I think the media got a hold of it. It's not just, it is media, but people have manipulated the media too. I mean, I remember, can't remember even anymore, and that's the thing about it. I can't remember exactly.
See, this is what we'll complain about when we get old, is I can't remember anymore.
I can't remember exactly what Jamie Dimon's stance was earlier this year. If he said we were going to get a bunch of rate cuts, or if he said we're going to
Rate
hikes. I don't remember.
Oh, it wasn't.
You don't remember neither, because see, he just throws that stuff out there to be right, and if he's not right, nobody will remember exactly what he said.
He's talked about this. He talked about the storm clouds and like the economy is going to crash. Like, he was very. Doom and gloom.
Yeah.
But you're right. It is. There's a media spin to it.
Yeah, we're gonna get 8 rate cuts.
It doesn't help that you're in a political.
We're gonna get 7 rate cuts. You know, we're gonna get 6 rate cuts.
Yeah, you're in an election cycle also, which always skews everything in terms of the messaging. But you know, all in all, like, I just saw something today about somebody was ranting and raving about, you know, our strategic petroleum reserves are at the lowest ever, and it's like, well, that's because I don't know that that's true. But I know that we're a net producer of oil. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
You know,
that's a rectifiable situation.
Yeah. Right. There's lots of good things going on in the economy. And it's just like, the market's at all-time highs, unemployment's low, you know, inflation's at a very reasonable level, you know, which gets back to my thesis why I think the market is just sort of looking for a reason to keep going higher. It's like, give me good earnings, good acceleration rate, and I can keep going higher.
We just might get it. I mean, we got, so far out of the ones that we had, Microsoft, I think they had good earnings. I'm pretty sure they did. Not Apple yet, not NVIDIA. Google had good earnings. Amazon yet to go. Meta did have good earnings, I believe.
Meta had good earnings, but they just...
But they said they're going to spend more money.
They're spending more money on AI.
Right, right.
Which is, like, you know, I'm not a new paradigm guy, okay? Like, every time somebody says that, it's like, whatever, fine. But you do have to recognize this is a huge tipping point. This is something that is going to fundamentally change a lot of things. And that's exciting.
Yes.
That is something we should be excited and not scared about. Right. That is something I agree with Tom on. Embrace it. Change is always good. Everybody, you know, there's always those naysayers that it's going to put people out of work. Well, okay, it may. Okay, you don't find a lot of, like, guys, you know, that do horse-drawn carriages anymore.
Yeah.
But they found other employment somewhere else. That's just the nature of evolution. It's the nature of Darwinism. So AI is a good thing, and it's exciting. And so when Meta said they're spending a lot more on AI, my personal reaction to it was, good. Do that. You know, market didn't like it. My position didn't particularly care for it.
Yeah, I think most people didn't, but I'm all for that. That's why I've always liked NVIDIA too, as it continues to
grow.
Clearly, I'm not the only one. So
no.
Big week next week. Fed meeting, got jobs report. We got who are the other two?
Another big day next week too. It's coming up. It's a big event.
The last two of the months, would you say, for the Mag 7, whatever?
Apple and Amazon?
Apple and Amazon earnings this week. So tune in, folks. It's going to be a heck of a show. Yeah. Thanks to my guest, Josh Fabian, for coming on. I'm Jamal Chandler. As always, be smart, be patient, trade small, trade off.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Life, Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be, trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered